listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg wrapped up a two-day trip to London on Friday. He warned that the military alliance could be under threat if the U.S. and its European allies fail to settle some pending disputes. Press TV's Amina Taylor filed this report from London.
NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg is warning that straining ties between the U.S. and its European allies are putting at risk 70 years of peaceful relationships and could risk the transatlantic and military alliance. Stoltenberg was in London to deliver that message in a series of high-profile meetings that included talks with the Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson and Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May.
Yes, we see differences between the United States and other allies over issues such as trade, climate, and the Iran nuclear deal. And there are disagreements within Europe too, over the future direction of the European Union, over values and populism. These disagreements are real. It is not written in stone that the transatlantic bond will survive forever.
The British Prime Minister was keen to stress Britain's status within NATO.
And the reports that you have read are not correct. We will continue to be, as we have been discussing today, continue to be, as I said earlier, that leading contributor to the alliance, but also a leading defence nation.
Despite the cries of unity, there are pressing issues to be clarified when it comes to the very future of NATO, including funding for the organisation and the role and influence of its members.
There are internal disputes at the moment within NATO, that is very clear, and the main issue is how much members of NATO are spending on their defence sector each year, and I believe that Mr. Stoltenberg feels, perhaps fears, that this dispute amongst NATO members is playing into the hands of Russia, because Mr. Stoltenberg has made very, very clear that NATO is being challenged, and the country challenging NATO is Russia.
Despite describing Russia as, quote, a common challenge to NATO members, the General Secretary was keen to play down any sense of antagonism between the two powers. Both Jens Stoltenberg and Theresa May represent institutions that are in dire need of international alliances. Both the British government and NATO must be aware that closer ties with the United States may well hold the key to their international fortunes, for better or for worse.
With the NATO summit taking place in Brussels in a matter of weeks, NATO and its allies will hope to positively address some of the pressing issues. But with recent history to go by, expect some political surprises. Amina Taylor, Press TV, London.
At least 8 people were reported killed in Syria following an airstrike by U.S.-led forces in Deir el-Zor province, according to state television in Damascus. The airstrike targeted the village of al-Sha'afa, destroying a number of houses, as well as public infrastructure, according to the Syrian Arab news agency, Sana'a. U.S. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said Thursday that Washington was, quote, deeply troubled by reports of increasing Syrian regime operations, closed quote, in southwest Syria that followed government moves to regain control of some rebel-held areas. Washington said it would take, quote, firm and appropriate measures, closed quote, in response to what it claimed were government violations of the de-escalation deal it brokered with Russia last year to attempt to contain the conflict in the southwestern part of the country. Thursday's strike followed another attack by coalition aircraft in which they reportedly bombed Syrian military positions in the Al-Bukamal area of Deir el-Zor province. When Sana'a reported on the strike, citing a military source who said there were fatalities and injuries, the Pentagon denied involvement, saying it was, quote, not a U.S. or coalition strike, closed quote. Some media reports, citing U.S. officials, blamed Israel for the attack. One area of contention among the parties involved in the war in Syria has been the repeated claims of the use of chemical weapons by various sides. Early Friday, Russia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Ministry of Defense held a joint briefing in Moscow to discuss some of the problems they've faced during investigations of the use of chemical weapons in Syria. This is Russia's Foreign Ministry spokesperson Maria Zakharova, followed by Major General Igor Kirillov, commander of the Radiological, Chemical, and Biological Defense Forces of the Russian Federation.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. We're glad to welcome you at this joint briefing held together by the Ministry of Defense and Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russia. This briefing is being held in Park Patriot, which is well known to all Russians, and I hope that with your assistance as well, as our briefing is oriented on the representatives of diplomatic missions in Moscow, it will be known better to our foreign colleagues, partners, and friends. It's not an occasional place from the point of view of selecting it, so we will refer to it later. And I would like to say that today, on 22nd of June, in Russia, we know this day is a day of sorrow and memory because the Second World War, Great Patriotic War started this day. We will have official events, and today Russian people commemorate those, remember those who did not return from this war. We were not doing this intentionally, but I think it's kind of symbolical that this event is held on this day. Today the world is going through hard times. It's not about one country or some regions, and Russian leadership spoke about it many times, and a lot has been said on the international platforms. The world is going through transformation. This transformation, of course, affects the international relations and the world we live in, its foundations, the legal frameworks were founded as a result of the Second World War. And the future of this world, the way its appearance depends into our probably and primarily from those people who are involved in military and diplomatic issues, the diplomats, the experts.
That's why today,
this traditional event will be used for us to provide, by us to provide you with the materials and our estimates of what is happening in Syria from the point of view of chemical issues. We have materials which deserve to be demonstrated today. In particular, to the left of me, to the right from you, you can see the equipment. And the leaks about this equipment appeared a few days ago, and the world is like that. The information is impossible to hide. This question was asked in our briefing in Samara, and I said that we'll do everything possible to answer this question. With facts in our hands, you have these facts, you can see them. And today, representatives of the Ministry of Defense and Ministry of Foreign Affairs invited you to speak about a very important issue, having these facts in hand, which is, and I would like to say it once more, our meeting is interactive. I'd like to say it once again, and you will have a chance to ask questions. I'm speaking about the representative of diplomatic missions. Our meeting is about the use of chemical weapons in Syria. I would also like to say that this problem will go deeper into details about this problem today, but I'd like to say that what you see is real equipment used by the guerrillas, by terrorists. It was found in Duma, the city of Duma. Now the investigation is taking place, who of the terrorists were using that. On one hand, that's a handmade it's a little plant, but it is semi-professional, and regardless of the fact we're speaking about guerrillas and terrorists, I cannot say with 100%, being sure 100%, I cannot give you specific information who specifically was using that from the guerrillas and from the terrorists. That's still a matter of investigation. I would like to focus your attention to this part, which from point of view of experts is a professional equipment, unfortunately was produced in the countries of Western Europe. There is no provenance. We are ready to provide specific information, work in order to our colleagues if they are interested in it, and I think there are no other variants about that, and demonstrate the proof that indeed, unfortunately, this equipment was provided to terrorists from the Western Europe. As for introduction from my side, I think I would conclude on that, and I will give the floor. We'll give the floor directly to the Igor Anatolievich Kirillov. You perfectly know him. Know him very well and many times in this very place, and he was delivering speeches in front of diplomatic representatives. Ladies and gentlemen, the Russian Federation has a specific position that the use of chemical weapons is should not be done, and everybody who uses that has to be punished. Russia has fulfilled an obligation and destroyed its chemical weapons. At the same time, U.S., Great Britain, and France are confusing the international community and facing confrontation. They blame Syrian Arab Republic in violating the convention and Russian contribution with it. On this background, the campaign was launched on turning the OPCW in a political structure, having the power to introduce strict blaming verdicts towards specific states and its leaders. The mission of OPCW is playing a certain role there, which has its investigations and consultations with US and its allies. The investigation of alleged incidents in Sarakhib, Sheikhoun, and Tamina, without visiting the location, speaks about non-professionalism of theirs. Not by chance they use such words like likely, probably, allegedly, etc. The language which is which should not be used for a serious document based on serious proofs. The analysis and use of documents which were obtained without experts going to the places of alleged use of chemical weapons directly contradicts to the provisions of the convention. Is it a norm that the only source of proof are the opposition or non-governmental organizations, white casks, Syrian American medical community, Syrian Center of Fixing Chemical Violations? These proofs are doubtful. Bearing in mind that white casks are assisting to such terrorist organizations as Al-Qaeda, Jabhat al-Nusra, and Jaish al-Islam, which officially announced the use of chemical weapons. During the investigation of this incident, they violated the basic principle of chain of custody, which implies strict consequence of actions to preserve the proof. Violation of standards of OPCW led to contradictions in facts in the reports of the investigations, which have brightly anti-Syrian, specific anti-Syrian character. One of the most well-known episodes is the provocation of white casks on 4th April 2017 in Han Sheikhoun, and they used the scenario of imitation of chemical weapons. Americans used this provocation, not waiting to the end of the investigation and the Security Council investigation. They made an air strike on Sharat base, and after that the mission started investigation in distance, and after 3 months it provided the reports. The report showed that characteristics of the science were witnessed that the explosives were located on the ground but not dropped from the aircraft, and after that the traces of explosives were covered with concrete. And then the video materials and where people are demonstrated without special protection of breath and skin, it speaks about lack of zarin in it, because in case if it was a chemical charge, people would be immediately damaged, both those who were assisting to the victims and the victims themselves. Then those suffered have no signs of phosphor. After 1 year, white casks, white helmets repeated the same scenario on the 7th of April 2018 in Duma. Like to say that Russian experts analyzed everything about this incident and came to the conclusion that this one more fake footage. So we figured out that in two apartments there were found gas containers allegedly dropped by governmental forces. At the same time, there was a number of doubtful things. First of all, there are no deformation on the containers. If they were dropped from 2,000 meters, they would have been damaged. After drop of that, the interior was intact. The bed where it was allegedly dropped was also intact. The It was delivered from the street, and there were no victims, no dead, and no casualties. They were sealed only 1.5 months after the inspection came. What result we can expect in the investigation of this incident, which already led to massive rocket missile shelling performed by the U.S., Great Britain, and France, violating international norms. They're allegedly preparing one more report with further proofs. As for assistance to the victims of chemical attack, Russian side brought the witnesses of this briefing to Hague, where they saw the convictional, the proofs of this provocation. I want to say that on the eve of a special session of the Conference of Member States of OPCW, called by the Initiative of Great Britain, the U.S. and France, they brought two more doubtable incidents which were previously not mentioned, which they say was on 4th February 2018 in Sarakip, 24th, 25th and 30th of March 2017 in El Latana. By this comfortable practice, the mission of the OPCW held a comfortable distance investigation and prepared a report and came to a conclusion that in the suburbs of Sarakip was allegedly used as the chemical weapon cores, which was spread mechanically. Two laboratories of OPCW, which analyzed the samples of the white helmets, came with contradictory conclusions. Organic components of chlor was found in 14 samples by one laboratory, and the other laboratory didn't find a single one. Also, there were traces of explosives in a number of samples, but witnesses spoke about no explosions which took place. Two laboratories identified the list chemicals of list 2 of the convention, where chlor has nothing to do with. At the same time, there is no full match of the analysis of samples. FFM does not consider this fact. They say that literally there are chemicals in the samples which cannot be explained as naturally found in the environment and relating to chloride. They were allegedly brought there by white casks which provided the samples to the FFM. The mission was postponing the investigation to accommodate the U.S. and their allies. And the final report on the incident in El Tamna was published 18 months after it allegedly happened, only to promote this fact, to promote the decision of the pseudo-court functions providing them to OPCW to find those guilty and to convict them. The experts of FFM said that on the southern outskirts of Alatamna, on 24th, 30th of March 2017, with high probability, Zarin was used. And on 25th March of 2017, they say allegedly chloride was used. Incidents of 24th and 30th of March 2017. The shell crater does not match with the shell crater typical for aviation shell, and it is imitated by white casks in Khan Shaykhun. The conclusion of FFM that it was chemical is not proved by any proofs. We made analysis of photos. There we can see fragments of strong corrosion of regular high explosive bomb, but not a chemical one. These munition parts were lying there not less than 5 years in the open, regardless of various meteorographical, ballistical and other conditions. The results of analysis of samples of Oledamne and Han Shih-Hun are practically identical. White helmets used some standard mixture to falsify the situation. The report also says that the representatives found four biometrical samples, and they showed the absence of biomarkers of cesium. Though it is obvious, this factor is used to be used in cesium, like 6.3 of the report. In this context, it is important to recognize that not being able to find biomarkers relating to exposure of organophosphate nerve agents may signify no exposure. Similarly, there are scientific reasons why these biomarkers may not be detected, principally due to the significant time lapse between potential exposure and collection, sample amount, and limit of detection of the analytical methods. That's going from the report. So we have to state that once more, procedure of medical probes and samples was violated, like in the case of Skripali. We remember the situation. All the media said that the mission which came to Salisbury was looking for samples. A point of report number 18. The samples were taken by personnel in the hospital with the use of equipment of the OPCW. Incident on 25th of March 2017. Alleged use of chloride is explained by the appointed laboratories found a set of chloro-organic components. In fact, based from the list, most of them are trichlorphenol, which is antiseptic and is present in the samples from the hospital. It's quite reasonable in this situation. Parallel to chloro-organic components, the degradation product of cesium was found. The reporters do not connect it with the use of cesium and explain that degazation by water was performed in this premise to those who suffered on 24th of March 2017. In this case, we have a question. Where are the other components of cesium found in the samples referring to this incident?
Where did they take it? According to our opinion, it was deliberately put into the samples in order to discredit the Syrian army. It's once again demonstrated that FFM conduct investigation as it pleases. It has nothing to do with the objectiveness, neutrality, and impartiality. In the territory of Syria, the specialists and experts of the chemical protection forces have repeatedly discovered the clandestine chemical laboratories and warehouses of toxic chemicals. Today we discovered more than 40 tons of the poisonous and toxic agents. We repeatedly asked to send experts on the ground, but they said that these 40,000 tons have been used for the decommission of the pools. We also identify the warehouse and specialized laboratory for the production of the chemical toxic agents. We provided these samples to the OPCW experts, but they were of no interest. This equipment is before you. This equipment, they produced highly technological, high-quality explosive 10. And we discovered also tiodeglycol and diethylamine, which could be used for the production of the sulfur and nitrogen mustards. And we have evidence of the application, and also as hexamine, which is a stabilizing additive for xylene. Besides, we identify the cylinder with chlorine, which is used to imitate the chemical attack. This equipment implements the final stage of fusion of blister agents, and this part is produced in the European countries. The reconstructive position of the Syrian Arab Republic and Russia are confirmed by the efforts which were undertaken in order to provide the comprehensive assistance and help to FFM in investigation in Duma. But we expect to see another anti-Syrian report. I would like to draw attention to the fact that Syria Syria eliminates all poisonous chemicals, and it was awarded, this organization was awarded with the Nobel Prize, and Syria is making every possible effort to complement all the obligations assumed in the limitation of the facilities. And Syrians eliminated on June 8, 2018, one of the chemical production facilities, and it was the OPCW said that they need to organize a tender in order to eliminate the chemical production facilities. And in conclusion, I would like to say that the Russian Federation is also trying to operate the specific facts and arguments. But our partners are always trying to shine this consideration. On the contrary, Russia is caring about the reputation of while trying to organize to overcome systematic failures and avoiding the politicization and prejudice in its work.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. It's become quite fashionable on the political left to call anyone you don't like a Nazi or Hitler. Why has it come to this? Why all the demonization? After all, words have meaning. And much, much more on this edition of Crosstalk. Crosstalking political insults. I'm joined by my guest, Mark Sloboda. He's an international affairs and security analyst. We also have Dmitry Babich. He's a political analyst with Sputnik International. And in Cyprus, we cross to Alex Christoforou. He is the director and writer for the Duran.com. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me first go to you, Alex, in Cyprus. I've often said on this program, you have to be careful with your political rhetoric because it's almost impossible sometimes to walk it back. Now we're in an environment, as I said in the introduction, anyone you don't like is a Nazi or Adolf Hitler. It tells me that the mainstream media and some politicians, particularly on the left, have no idea what a Nazi is or what Hitler was all about. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, they have. I agree with you. They have no idea what a Nazi is or what Hitler is about. You're exactly right. It shows that they've lost the debate based on facts, whether you're talking about Russiagate or the Mueller investigation or the whole Russia collusion thing, or even a lot of what's being said about immigration. I'm not going to take a position one way or another, but it just shows that they don't want to argue based on facts or logic. They just fall back straight to the identity politics. If you don't agree with them, you're a fascist. You're a Nazi, you're a white supremacist, whatever they want to call you. But it's also, Peter, it's extremely dangerous because call someone a Nazi, once the press starts demonizing someone, they become a Nazi, it signals to the general public that the Nazi has to be stopped.
Right.
And when you want to stop a Nazi, you have to resort to the most extreme violence. And a lot of times the violence can be justified because someone can say, well, I was stopping the next Hitler. I was stopping the next Nazi. So it leads to a very dangerous place.
And it's hard to walk back from it. Mark Ndima, for our viewers, please explain to them what happened not years after Hitler came to power, but in a matter of weeks. Ndima, okay?
It's, within, I think, 6 weeks, Hitler consolidated full power in Germany.
And what did that mean?
He passed...
No trade unions.
Absolutely.
No political parties.
Absolutely.
The press is completely suppressed, extinguished.
After the arson of Reichstag, basically all rivaling political forces were removed from the scene. Parties existed formally, but there was this Gesetz zum Schutz von Volk und Staat, which means a law for the protection of the state and the nation, which basically made it impossible to impeach Hitler in any way. When people now are talking about elections in November, after 1933, it made no sense in Germany to talk about elections. Hitler was not impeached even in 1944, 1945, when Germany was basically losing the war that he started. So if there is any parallel, it's not between Hitler and Trump. If there are any people in Europe who still adore Hitler or his allies, then look at the Ukrainian government. They passed a law recently which makes it illegal to criticize the Ukrainian nationalist groups such as the Ukrainian Insurgent Army, which allied themselves to the Nazis in 1941 and 1944. In Latvia, some of the SS Legion forces they started to be revered after Latvia stopped to be a part of the Soviet Union in 1991. And that continues. But it continued under Clinton, it continued under Obama.
The thing is, for me, Mark, it tells me this is a mindset. Again, Alex already mentioned it. It's an extreme form of virtue signaling, okay? I mean, because... it's not about arguments, it's not about a debate, it's about your moral standing in society, which by the very definition of using these terms is zero, Mark.
Yeah, a very hypocritical definition of moral standing in society. What we're seeing is the absolute polarization of American politics between the liberals and particularly the supporters of the current president in the United States. And this absurd rhetoric of calling someone Nazis and equating Trump's administration, you don't have to like him. I don't like a great deal, particularly domestically, of what the man is doing. But this completely devalues the actual losses of the 6 million plus Jews that died in the Holocaust, the 20 to 30 million Soviet citizens that died,
the
death toll in Serbia, the death toll of millions as well, all across Eastern Europe. It completely devalues and delegitimizes.
Look, actually, let me go back to Alex in Cyprus here. Mark is spot on. It trivializes what fascism and what Hitler's Third Reich did in the 20th century. The use of this rhetoric by the left trivializes one of the most treacherous and dangerous and least humane time in human history. Alex.
Yeah, the words they start to lose their meaning because they're just said so often and so frivolously that there's no meaning behind it. And a lot of the people don't understand that, as Dima explained, they don't understand the history behind the word, but they're just using it to stir up so much anger and so much hate and so much division that it's going to lead to a very, very bad place. I mean, Peter, you had the Home Secretary couldn't eat at a Mexican restaurant the other day. Nielsen, they shamed her out. Sarah Huckabee Sanders was at a restaurant the other day, and they wouldn't serve her. So, I mean, it's getting to the point of mass hysteria.
You know, Dima, I worry is that someone's going to take it a step further,
yes,
and we're going to see violence. We already saw it with Congressman Scalise when he was on a baseball pitch. We had someone come out and use violence. Thank God he survived. But this is creating, it's normalizing hysteria is what it's doing.
Well, if we look at the psychological roots of this, it is basically avoidance of reality. As Michael Brenner, I think just a great American thinker of today, as he put in his article, basically people are seeing so many contradictions. Al-Qaeda is the evil incarnate, but we should not criticize those allies who provision and finance them, like Turkey and Saudi Arabia, right? In Afghanistan, Obama declared the war over. He declared it won a few years ago, but we have to send troops to Afghanistan. Basically, under Obama and under George Bush the Jr., torture was legitimized and we're killing people from drones. How do you avoid it? How you stop thinking about it? Well, we are facing fascists, you know. Russians are bombing ISIL and other terrorists, but Russians are bad guys because Putin is so authoritarian, right?
And now we have a head of the CIA that has a track record of committing acts of torture.
Against fascists, of course.
Normalizing everything. Yeah, everything. It's acceptable, okay?
It's already been, and where we're going with that normalizing, you could be preparing society for some kind of shock where the politically impossible suddenly becomes
somebody
political necessity.
Well,
Adima's already said it before, it can't be said again. In this world, in the world today, there is really one clear example of fascism, Banderite fascism, resurgent in Ukraine and somewhat, you could say, in some of the Baltic states, where people literally get into Waffen-SS uniforms and celebrate their ancestors' collaboration. Josh Cohen, writing for the Atlantic
Council.
Right
here, if we get the camera on it, because it's a good article. Read the title, Mark.
The title is, Ukraine's Got a Real Problem with Far-Right Violence, parentheses, and no, RT didn't write this headline. Yes, Josh, RT did not write this headline because we reported it four years ago when it was happening.
This Josh Cohen, he must have been living under a rock for 4 years.
Now, he's reporting about these ultra-nationalist far-right, you know, a code for Banderite fascist militias, funded, supported, and sent against their own citizens by the putsch regime that the West backed in Ukraine. Azov, Idar, the right sector, the new National Druzhina, which is like our parallel police force, and C-14, which stands for the 14 words, which even have a $17,000 from the Ukrainian putsch regime for kids camps. And he reports that these are launching attacks on Roma camps, anti-fascist demonstrations, city council meetings, an Amnesty International event, art exhibitions, LGBT events, international environmental activists, and the Women's Day March. Now, these, just so you know, Western media, these people that you were backing in Ukraine, at least the vanguard of the new government that helped brought it to power and keep it there, those are actual, honest to God, real fascists.
Alex, you know, I already brought up the term virtue signaling. I mean, this whole, again, I think you put it really well, however you want to fall on the immigration debate. But, you know, if you have the picture of Time, the cover of Time magazine, Trump with that a child, I mean, on so many levels, that cover is fictitious. It's a fraud.
Hashtag fake news.
Right. It's fake news, okay? And particularly when Trump found himself squeezed, okay, he caved, whatever word you want to use, but he inherited a problem, and he's still being blamed for it, okay, even when he took action. Go ahead, Al.
Yeah, it was completely fake. I mean, the whole story was fake. The whole hysteria about the little girl, nothing about it was even close to her getting taken away, snatched from the arms of her mother. But, I mean, there's no need to go into detail. The whole thing was fake news. And that's why people are calling CNN and Time and all these outlets fake news, because they really are reporting and they're fabricating fake news. But I also want to get to the point that the whole neo-Nazi white supremacist thing is not only confined to the U.S. The other day we saw, and I hate to bring her up, Hillary Clinton was at Trinity College in Dublin, And she was talking about how Russian President Vladimir Putin is trying to drive NATO and the EU away from the arms of the U.S., and he's the leader of the white supremacist xenophobia movement. So you can see this whole idea of everybody's a fascist except us neoliberals, except us globalists, except us liberal leftists, is they're trying to spread it past the U.S., and it's a term that's now becoming internationalized.
Yeah, the absolute irony of that is the U.S.'s preferred leader for Russia, Alexei Navalny, is the actual ultranationalist,
he's a racist,
xenophobe.
Right, I have to jump in here, gentlemen. We have to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, let me go to Dima here. We talked a little bit about this last week. Since then, there's a meeting between Putin and Trump. It's getting some traction right now. Bolton is setting up the background. He's not. I don't think he's a person that is particularly keen on it, but maybe Pompeo and Trump are pushing him. I am not particularly convinced that it's a good idea for them to have a one-on-one at this point. What are your thoughts?
Well, I just don't think they can produce substantial results simply because of the pressure which Trump is under now, and pressure from the Congress, pressure from the media. But what made me laugh is the reaction of the so-called liberals in the United States. They're afraid of this meeting. Just let me quote Anne Applebaum from the Washington Post. Get ready for another lavish televised laugh fest, this time between Trump and Putin. And what is she afraid of? She's afraid of a trade-off between them. And the trade-off is going to be, let me quote an Applebaum, we stop holding military exercises in Europe. In exchange, we allow Russia to keep Crimea. Which is like, I give you something, and then I give you something more, right? It's just incredible how these people are afraid. It reminded me of Ronald Reagan being afraid of Helsinki agreements in 1975.
I don't think you have to go that far. It reminds me of the same thing they said about the North Korean summit that might just bring peace to the Korean Peninsula.
Absolutely,
the
yes.
Exact same
how awful they meet.
It's as if you get the impression that Anne Applebaum thinks that Ukraine is her personal possession, okay,
yes.
That it's being bargained away.
Well, she wrote that nationalism is exactly what Ukraine needs in 2014.
In the New Republic.
So if anyone is praising the supporters of Hitler, well, you can make your own judgment.
My only comment to Anne Applebaum and Ukraine and nationalism is that what has happened is since 2014, there is a nationalism there, but no nation, okay?
Yes.
Mark, how do you fall on a summit, a one-on-one? Because it seems to me that even though Russiagate is winding down, it's really turning into FBI gate and DOJ gate more than anything else. But we have seen that the media isn't going to let this go. And in light of what we said in the first part of the program, it's just going to be more demonization. I think they should meet if they can have some substance. I don't like these kind of meetings without substance, Mark.
Yeah, I'm afraid that until Trump gets control of his own foreign policy and there's some kind of end, whatever way, to this witch hunt with the Russiagate conspiracy that's going on, that he doesn't really have anything that he can offer Russia. It's not in Russia's interest to have this summit. Micah Zenko, a Western journalist, just tweeted this week. The former Chinese official diplomat he met with today said, every country thinks America's gone crazy. We benefit by doing nothing other than appearing sane. And I think that's Russia's best strategy at this point. Just sit back. Now, there are some cons to this. There is a ticking we have a timer ticking towards the end of the intermediate range nuclear forces and the new START treaty, right? And the beginning of this new arms race. The longer these issues go unaddressed and hopefully some new treaties are fashioned, the worse, right? God forbid that they aren't renewed or recreated in some fashion. But I don't think that Trump can actually bring anything to the table when his own government, his own, in some ways, figures in his own administration are still in revolt at the idea that he might bring some type of transactional diplomatic relation with Russia in an attempt to improve relations with the world's only other nuclear power that could conceivably end the United States in a nuclear war.
Let me go to Alex Christophora in Cyprus. What is your take on a possible a summit. I mean, Mark has done a pretty good job of giving the pros and cons right there. I just think that it would be much better to have the second IG report come out on this Russiagate fiasco fantasy, and then he would probably have a little bit more leverage, because after 2 years, there's been no evidence, and I don't expect there's going to be any. That's the cloud that needs to leave the scene before I think there would be any kind of meaningful summit. What do you think, Alex, in Cyprus?
Yeah, I definitely think the whole Russia-Trump collusion thing has, without a doubt, morphed into the microscope and the focus being on the FBI and the DOJ. That goes without question. But saying that, I think if he does take a summit with Putin, then you're going to just be feeding the sharks. And it's just going to shift the focus right back to the whole Trump-Russia collusion narrative, even though there is no evidence. The media will push that story. But I also want to say one very quick thing, which is I don't want to bet against Trump's political instincts. Sometimes he does crazy stuff and it turns out in his favor. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe he knows something we don't.
No, you took the words right out of my mouth. Exactly. I was just about to say that. You know, he'll surprise us here. Mark, go ahead.
If I were him, I wouldn't want to do it before the 2018 midterm elections that could result in a power change in the House, if not the Senate. But I don't know. Trump may decide to roll the dice.
Okay. You know, Dima, one of the things that I find really interesting as a tangent to all of this here is that, going back to our demonization conversation that we were having, there's growing evidence that the more Trump is demonized, the more his base can look past his blemishes.
I got the numbers for that on you,
Peter. Go ahead.
Pew just came out. 90% of Republicans now have an approve of the performance of Donald Trump, which is the highest of any Republican
that
since
George
W. Bush.
That is a remarkable number, because when he was elected, it wasn't even close to that.
The polarization, the other side of that, is only 15% of Democrats approve of his performance, which is a likewise. It's the polarization of American politics.
Again. Alex Christopher, reflect upon that, because you've been looking at these kinds of things here. I mean, his base are going to stand by him irrespective of his blemishes. And there are many, okay? But he's a known quantity to them, okay? Go ahead.
Yeah, because the Democrats and much of the establishment left media, they demonize his base. I mean, just the other day, there was a pundit on Morning Joe who said that anyone that has voted for Trump should also consider themselves a xenophobe, a white supremacist. So, I mean, they don't accomplish anything by demonizing not only Trump, but they demonize his base as well. And so his base is also just saying, you know what? If you guys are going to call us that all day, we're going to support this man and we're going to stand behind him. There's no talk of policy.
No, the interesting thing is, gentlemen, I'll go to Mark next year. The most interesting thing that happened during the 2016 presidential election is not meeting with Russians. It wasn't leaked emails. It was one sentence coming from Hillary Clinton: deplorables. This is what it is being amplified to the nth degree right now. And she said it. And the Democrats are paying for it.
Yeah, those numbers I give you, that's not just his base. This is the mainstream of the Republican Party, who were not necessarily happy about his election in many stretches, rallying around him. And I would guess no small number of independents as well. And this is a result of Russiagate and FAW outrage fatigue. And I'll pass to Dima here.
Well, I mean, the demonization doesn't work internationally. I mean, how many supporters did President Assad have before 2011 outside Syria? Very few, you know. He was little known, a young man, an ophthalmologist. But after the United States and the EU have been demonizing him for several years, he has a fan club now. And these people are completely impervious.
On Facebook, they have this the Assad jinx, or the curse.
Exactly.
And how many
Assad
people go, right?
Curse. Kim Jong-un is suddenly an international diplomatic rock star.
And so is his sister.
And if it works internationally, why shouldn't it work in the United States?
That's a very interesting one. Alex, I want to go to you before for this segment here. How many people does it take at the top of the FBI to go for the liberals to realize something's going wrong, okay? I mean, how many people are gone, all right? It's remarkable.
It was Horowitz's testimony was scathing. It was stunning. I mean, what we learned is it's not just about Lisa Page and Peter Strzok. There was a whole team of FBI agents that were vehemently, they were so anti-Trump, pro-Hillary, it was astonishing. And all of this is now coming out in the open. It's the pure definition of a boomerang. They pushed the Russia-Trump collusion thing, and what they ended up doing is they ended up destroying the reputation of the DOJ and the FBI.
Alex, you know, the thing is, I watched Horowitz's testimony, and, you know, I think even he had to begrudgingly, at least in his body language and his tone and all that, is that he was actually agreeing with all of the criticism.
Yeah.
And not with his outcome of the report. It just seemed very mild. But if you get into the details, he agreed at every step of the way. The thing is, Mark, that I find interesting is that we're going to come across these cast of characters one more time because the IG still has its Russia Gate investigation. Peter Strzok, we haven't heard the last of this guy.
Yeah, I think that we will all see. Certainly, the Republicans in the Congress and elsewhere really need to pursue this. They need to launch legal proceedings.
But the liberal media is almost they took the Trump taking children away from their parents, Dima, and ignored the IG report almost completely.
Well, I mean, let's look at all of this Russia-Trump collusion. The only person in jail right now is Paul Manafort, right? And what do I read about Paul Manafort in the New York Times? Paul Manafort pressed Yanukovych to sign an agreement with the European Union that would link the country closer to the West and lobbied for the Americans to support Ukraine's membership.
Okay.
Well, this is something that Paul Manafort should be put in jail for. Should be, because this story led to the Maidan and to the whole...
He's not actually in jail. He's in pretrial detention.
Okay, pretrial detention.
And the only thing he's there for is tax avoidance for
it's
Ukraine.
Nothing to do with Russia.
Nothing to do with the election.
Nothing to do with Russia.
But yeah. If there is one thing that can make Ukrainians happy now, that is Paul Manafort in pretrial detention. Anything that reminds us of jail, you know, this is the right thing to do.
We're going to find out if with Flynn and with Manafort, if the FBI changed records. Okay. What are they called? 302s, okay?
Yeah, sure.
We're going to find out if that happened here.
But
it's going to be a very interesting week, gentlemen.
It's just amazing that a person is basically put in pretrial detention for doing something very pro-Western, you know. This is something the United States and the EU wanted to achieve.
I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. There are accusations that Manafort was tampering with witnesses, okay? I mean, if you're a lobbyist like Manafort and others in Washington, D.C., you don't have the cleanest hands.
He's a sleazeball.
By definition. All right, gentlemen, I'm
going to
jump in here. Many thanks to my guests here in Moscow and in Cyprus. This is the end of our broadcast segment. Stay with us for the extended version on our YouTube channel. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, Community Public Radio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.